This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
John V. Denson is the author of A Century of War, the editor of Reassessing the Presidency, and The Costs of War. John, it seems one of the themes of your scholarship is how the U.S. always succeeds in getting countries that it would like to go to war with to fire the first shot, so it seems like it's the aggrieved party rather than the aggressor. And certainly this seems to have been Woodrow Wilson's tactic in what became World War I. Would you talk to us about what he did, the sinking of the Lusitania, and how he wanted to go to war and how he helped bring about the U.S. entry into the war?
All right, I discussed World War I in my article with Roosevelt's title, Roosevelt and the First Shot. And it's always been my contention in reading history that World War I and World War II were really one war with a 20-year recess. So I go into the Wilson in that article about the first shot in Roosevelt and point out in regard to the Lusitania, that was a ship that was built in England with government subsidy, which gave the government the right to convert it to a ship that carried contraband and so forth of weapons during wartime. So it had been converted at the time it was sailing back and forth to America. And at the time, it had on board a lot of ammunition and a lot of illegal contraband for war purposes. And the Germans learned about that in advance and began to get word to the Wilson administration and to Secretary Braun. Secretary of State Braun got knowledge of it and went to Wilson and said, "We need to warn the American people not to sail on that ship because the Germans say it's an illegal ship carrying illegal contraband and that they intend to sink it." And Wilson refused to have any public notice about this warning. And at the same time, the Germans began to take out ads and run in major newspapers in America that the ship was an illegal ship and was subject to being sunk. And it never took hold, apparently. And so Americans were on that ship. I forget the number. I think 123 maybe died. But there was clear warning in advance. It was an illegal ship. Wilson knew it. But he was looking for a way to get into the war and make it appear that the other side had fired the first shot. He had already sent Colonel House to England, just as Roosevelt sent Harry Hopkins before the war to discuss getting into the war long before America did. So that was one of the main things that got Americans upset with the Germans, that they were sinking a ship with Americans on board. And it did appear to the general population that the Germans were firing an unprovoked shot to help start the war. And then the sinking of the Sussex was another thing. It was a French ship that was going across the channel, and it was sunk by a submarine, but it was designed at that time, the Sussex was, to look like a warship. And the statement got out to the effect that the Germans had sunk another ship unprovoked and so forth. The only thing about it is the ship didn't sink and no lives were lost. The ship was damaged and was hidden in France for a while after the war. But after that, Justice Brandeis, who Wilson had appointed to the Supreme Court, advised Wilson that the sinking of the Sussex was clearly enough to justify getting into the war. So two lies there, the Lusitania and the Sussex, both played a role in getting America into the war that Wilson wanted. Wilsonianism has come to mean to try to spread democracy by force, and that's what Wilson intended to do and to launch his League of Nations idea and make him probably the greatest man in all history to end all war. So this was a way to get into the war at the end, bring it to a close, be the hero of the world, and bring on world peace forever.
And I guess when he went to Europe after the war, he was greeted as almost a god on earth.
He was. There are accounts where when his ship landed, he had to take a train to Paris. And the people that were on the train said they stood up during the night. And in midnight, there were people lined for miles and miles just to watch his train go by. He was considered the savior of Europe, the savior of the world, the most famous and popular man that ever existed. He was worshipped throughout Europe, and especially in Italy. A lot of they changed the names of streets and put his sign as a picture up on the walls, along with Jesus and Virgin Mary and Wilson. The important thing, I think, also is that Franklin Roosevelt was in his administration, and he went to Europe for the Versailles Conference, and he saw all this adulation and worship of Wilson. And you know, Wilson was the greatest man that ever lived. And he was always a hero to Roosevelt. But Wilson was an idealist that never compromised, and Roosevelt saw how he could duplicate what Wilson had done if he would be willing to compromise, and he certainly did that in creating the United Nations. And I think that's one of the main ideas that brought Franklin Roosevelt into World War II.
And didn't Wilson also, by bringing the U.S. into that war, make possible the rise of Hitler and the rise of Lenin, and of course, as you say, the second installment of World War II that started in 1939?
Right. There's a lot written on this, and I've spoken, as you know, on the Versailles Treaty, but when Wilson proposed the 14 points, the idea was that this would be a just peace where there would be no victors. And the only problem was the other two people, Lloyd George and Clemenceau, wanted revenge, and they were reelected on a platform of socket to the Germans. And so when the conference occurred, Wilson got his League of Nations, but everything else was a scramble for loot, as Nock said. And the League of Nations was merely the vehicle by which the loot would be taken and remain with the looters. So it was a drastic, draconian, Carthaginian peace that was inflicted on the Germans. So it was the American entry into the war and that made it go so long, that kept it from going so long, but made it where the there was a victor in the war, the Allies. And Wilson had promised in a letter from Lansing on November 5 that the peace would be done on the basis of the 14 points. And, of course, that was absolutely abrogated by the treaty itself. So Germany surrendered on the basis of the 14 points, and then they were dictated to on the treaty. And there's a conversation that's often quoted about a lady asked to somebody, said, "Do you know where Hitler was born?" And she said, "Yes, at Versailles."
John, another aspect of what Wilson did was to demand unconditional surrender, I would argue, and certainly the just war tradition argues, an immoral a tactic where you demand that the other side be entirely smashed. And he wanted to get rid of the German monarchy, and he wanted to destroy Germany. And then, of course, there was a horrible anti-civilian starvation blockade run for 6 months after the war. A lot of people died. The country was destroyed, and the Kaiser overthrown. And it opened the way, so tragically, for Hitler to come to power in later years.
That's right. And it also, the fact that it opened the door for overthrow of the Russian Tsar. It was America mainly, but also the other allies that tried to encourage the Tsar to stay in the war when he should have probably backed out to save his government and reach some sort of accord with Germany. But they asked him to stay in the war, and he stayed in to the point where his whole army rebelled against him. And that's what allowed the Bolsheviks to take over. I know on LouRockwell.com I sent you a quotation from Winston Churchill that he made to a newspaper editor in New York in 1936. Churchill took the position in that statement that it was America's entry into World War I that really gave rise to fascism in Italy, Nazism in Germany, and the communism in Soviet Russia, and that we should have stayed home and stayed out of European politics. And he blamed the whole isms, he said, that were marching across Europe now on America's entry into the war. Because he was one of the main people responsible for getting America into that war, but he was now blaming America for all the isms, Nazism, communism, and fascism that were taking over the world. That editor publicized that statement and eventually gave an affidavit to Congress about it. Probably for that reason, Roosevelt had him indicted for sedition, and that trial did take place in 1944, but he was removed from the indictment, and he never was charged with it. After that, they amended the indictment to take him out, but Roosevelt never forgave him for publicizing Churchill's statement. Churchill admitted at the interview, but said he couldn't recall making such a statement.
Hate to agree with Churchill, but of course he was right.
He was right on that point.
John Denson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.